Hey, and welcome to The Living Stone, a digital ministry from Greystone Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. Here's this week's scripture reading and sermon.
I'll be reading from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 through 25. Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them said, whose name was Cleopas, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all of this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening, and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and he gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road? While he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road, and how he had been made known to them at the breaking of the bread." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
A preacher, a soap maker, and a cat groomer boarded a plane from Austin, Texas, to RDU. One was dressed in reasonably solid-colored athleisure, whereas the other two were dressed in colorful, patterned clothing reminiscent of that which the young people wore as they left Woodstock in 1969 after 3 days of peace and music. There was a daisy clip that hung on the end of a wire connecting it to the blue bucket hat worn by the cat groomer, and its bounce, the bounce of the daisy matched the whimsy of its wearer just enough to assure the pastor that the only thing this triad of Southwest airline passengers had in common would be the exit row that they were sharing. It's a funny thing when surprising strangers come together. Sometimes nothing comes of it, but sometimes something really remarkable does. You see, there was a sermon preached that day, one with lasting impact on at least one hearer. But I bet you couldn't guess which one of this motley crew gave the sermon. You may have guessed by now that I was the preacher on that airplane. But it wasn't me who brought the good news. No, I was the one who brought all kinds of assumptions about this pair of strangers with whom I was going to share the exit row. I was the one returning home from the indescribable beauty of the full solar eclipse, brought with a touch of a sour attitude, if I'm honest. I was the one who wanted just to be left alone with my feelings about everything that had happened in the days before. Which is how I know that if I had been on the road to Emmaus all those years ago, I too would have been absolutely oblivious to the fact that resurrection was staring me in the face. I would have completely been oblivious to the fact that Jesus was walking beside me. Today marks the third Sunday, or actually the fourth Sunday, of the season of Eastertide. It's the fourth Sunday in the season of Sundays in which we tell and remember the stories of the resurrection of Christ. And if you thought that Easter was just a day, we've got some work to do. Because Easter is a season. It takes some time for us to tell and retell all the diversity of stories that just barely begin to describe the mysterious reality of the resurrection, which is the cornerstone of our faith. This is why Easter is a season. Christ is alive and is appearing to the disciples all around Judea, and there are so many stories of resurrection. Last week, as Pastor April said, we read an account from John's Gospel where Jesus appears to the disciples in their fishing boats and then serves up breakfast on the shore of Galilee. The week before that, we heard the Easter message sung through beautiful music with the gifts of our musicians as they proclaimed the glory of new life, of resurrection. And 2 weeks prior, on Easter Sunday, we read Luke's story about the women who woke up early and went to the tomb on the third day to anoint Jesus' dead body with spices. And there, they were met by men in dazzling clothing, angels, we assume, as they informed the women that Jesus was no longer there where they expected him to be. No, Jesus was, well, risen. The women went and told the other disciples what they had seen, but the group did not believe them, except for maybe Peter, who took off running toward the tomb to see for himself. And so today we pick up where that story leaves off in Luke's gospel, this time with a pair of disciples, presumably two who had been in the room that morning, with the group, and remember how the group responded. They called the women's story an idle tale, worthless garbage. Now, these two disciples are traveling the road between Jerusalem and Emmaus, and on that road, everything changes when they have a mysterious encounter of their own. Whether it was a major road or a minor road, we're not quite sure, but we do know that the distance between the cities, Jerusalem and Emmaus, was about 7 miles. We know it because Luke tells us. And the important thing to remember about that distance, while it might not seem so long to us, when you're walking, it's a whole day's journey. We know it had been a holiday weekend in Jerusalem, so we can imagine that there was holiday traffic on this holy road, much like I-95 or I-40 on the last day after Memorial Day weekend, or maybe Labor Day weekend when everyone is coming back from our holiday trips. But unlike our holiday traffic jams, where we wait patiently in isolation, in our own cars, not yelling at anyone else who might be irritating us. When you travel on a holiday weekend in the ancient world, you walk alongside one another, or maybe a group of one another's. If you've ever flown Southwest Airlines, you might be aware that they have a different kind of boarding procedure. Unlike the other major airlines who assign seats and then you're invited to join and then go to your assigned seats, Southwest doesn't really do things that way. No, at the Southwest gates, passengers with boarding positions numbered 1 through 60 line up in numerical order with their groups, either A, B, or C. And what that does is it leaves you in a crowded line of strangers, all heading in the same direction, standing between the terminal windows, which sometimes can be rather warm, and the seating area at the gate where others are waiting. Now, on a normal travel day, folks travel for all kinds of reasons. But on the day I flew from Austin to Raleigh, everybody was heading home from the great American eclipse of 2024. That typically quiet line that normally respects the different moods of different travelers as we wait to see which seat will be ours on the plane, well, on this particular day, it was awfully chatty. The peculiar pair who would soon be my exit row mates on the flight home, they were standing pretty close to me in that boarding line. And nearby, there were some other young adults, 20-somethings, who were dressed rather similarly to the pair I would find myself with. And in addition to their peculiar clothing, my judgment, of course, I noticed that they all carried suspiciously small bags, as if they didn't need much for their journey. And I thought to myself, who taught this generation how to pack? In addition to their ability to pack lightly, this group of travelers also found it impossible to keep their excitement to themselves. I heard them say quite loudly for my mood, remember, did you see it? They asked everybody in line, did you see it? Surely there's no other reason to be in Austin, Texas in the springtime when the weather is absolutely perfect. Did you see the eclipse? That's why you were here, right? Did the clouds cover it up, or was it like where I was, where they parted just perfectly when it was full totality and you could see that beautiful ring of fire? Did you see it? Wasn't it amazing? One traveler, the soap maker, if I remember correctly, went on about how his experience, not only with the eclipse itself, but with the community of folks who gathered for the whole weekend, camping in tents, which they did not bring with them, tents that were just set up there waiting for them. The whole weekend, as young adults gathered with suspiciously small bags to come and camp together and attend concerts and see original art, to share in the transcendent moment, which was just about 4 minutes, actually. And for the soap maker, this changed his whole life. And he couldn't help but tell us about it. Changed your life, huh? Another skeptical passenger said. How did it change your life? Well, he thought deeply, and then he spoke. You know, I guess it just made me think a little bit more about my place in this world, about how small I really am, and about how big the earth is, how we are all just a tiny, minuscule part of a much bigger universe. And putting things into that kind of perspective made me appreciate the joy and the love and the beauty that I was finding, not only in the sun, but in the community that gathered as we all came together. And now I see, he says, as I'm going home, preparing to get back to my everyday life, that these are the things that really matter: joy, love, beauty. These are the things that I need to work toward in my everyday life. These are the things for which I am so grateful. Preach. Joy, love, beauty, and I would add mystery. That's what these modern day free spirits took away from their time celebrating the eclipse. It wasn't a full-scale sermon, at least not like the ones that I grew up hearing that proclaimed the love and the joy and the beauty of God, but it stuck with me in all the same ways that really good sermons should stick. And it forced me to wrestle with my own sense of awe and wonder. Why wasn't it me, the preacher, who couldn't keep quiet about joy and love and the beauty of God's creation as we all got ready to board the plane that day? Why wasn't I the first to see and proclaim the glory of God publicly without any shame or embarrassment? Why wasn't it me who was returning home renewed and refreshed by the mystery of God's creation? Those questions made me know that I had something in common with the disciples, that we were the same kind of travelers. You see, we were respectful of the somber moods that overwhelmed our hearts, heavy with the suffering we had seen in recent days, plagued with questions and grief that made us cynical for a time, hesitant, if not unable, to embrace the hope that we once held so faithfully, and also full of the fatigue that so often accompanies those huge experiences of feelings and emotions. Losing a rabbi, a teacher, a friend is hard. It's painful. Running to the tomb for any reason is exhausting. But as these disciples traveled that Emmaus road, a peculiar stranger came and traveled alongside, walking with them, asking questions about their lives, what they'd experienced in Jerusalem in the days before, things that this stranger really should have known, but stories the disciples really needed to tell. The disciples could have asked him to go away, or just maybe to walk a few yards behind or on up ahead. They could have said they just needed space. That's honestly what I would have said. But they didn't. And truly, thank God, they didn't. Instead, they hosted the surprising stranger and allowed him to be a guest on their journey. And then when they got close to their destination, they invited Jesus to come on in to stay with them because darkness was falling and the day was coming to an end. Where would he go if not where they were going? How could they just leave him out there in the darkness of night? You know, it wasn't until later, though. It wasn't until the dinner. Even after spending the whole day walking and talking, it wasn't until the dinner when Jesus took the bread and blessed it and broke it and then gave it to them. It wasn't until that moment when they realized that this stranger was no stranger at all. And as soon as they knew it was him, Luke tells us he was gone, vanished from their sight. It was just a small glimpse of resurrection that the disciples felt that day, that they saw with their eyes as the traveler journeyed along with them and then joined them at the table. It was just a small little glimpse of resurrection, and it's so often the breaking of the bread that does it. It's when he breaks the bread that the disciples finally remember where they've met this man before. It's when he breaks the bread, when the flesh of the bread itself is torn and then the pieces crumble to the table. It's then that their eyes are finally opened and they can see what is actually happening. It's when he breaks the bread that they are brought back from the shadows of death and they realize life has won. And that exact location where the bread is broken, that is precisely where the church lives. Gathered around the table, telling the old, old stories, sharing in the feast. It is in the scriptures and at the table that the story itself breaks open for us and we realize again and again that life has won. But sometimes, though, if we're honest, that breaking open means not just rejoicing in the triumphs of life, but also opening our eyes to see the broken places in our world, opening our eyes to recognize that this place we live in is always halfway between Jerusalem and the kingdom of heaven, halfway between the empty tomb and the kingdom of heaven. And it's in that in-between place where we live that our lives are so often tinged by pain and grief just as much as they are filled with life and love. But if the church really does live at that table around which the bread is broken, then we have a very important story to tell, a story of resurrection that proclaims that all of these old, old stories have value and that they contribute to the bigger resurrection story, which insists that life and love will prevail in the end, that continues to learn what death looks like at first, but also remember that even though it looks like death, it's really just the ground from which new life will emerge. You see, our resurrection story is one that proclaims the joy and the love and the beauty and the mystery of life with God. And perhaps most importantly, our resurrection story is one that is humble enough to know that the story is never complete until every surprising guest has met us at the table. Friends, I'm afraid that we, the church, have forgotten this critical piece of our bigger resurrection story. As we have celebrated Easter throughout millennia, we have told the story of how Jesus rose from the grave, but in our retelling, I'm afraid that we might have domesticated the story a little bit too much, taking out the critical element of surprise, which we find in every single biblical resurrection account. I'm afraid that we have forgotten that we too might be surprised by the places and the people who offer us glimpses of resurrection, that we too can miss or pass by or even dismiss the bearers of good news. Maybe for something as superficial as the daisy clips on their hats, or the colorful clothing that they wear. As we make our walk from Jerusalem to Emmaus, which is in a sense a walk from the tomb to new life, maybe even a good metaphor for our own journeys from cradle to grave. As we make our walk from Jerusalem to Emmaus, and as we walk together on this road, we need to ask God to open our eyes to the strangers around us so that we might be renewed by all the surprising guests that we've gotten good at ignoring. And so today, as we revisit the resurrection accounts, as we read this different story, but put it in context with all the other resurrection stories, maybe we could learn just one thing today. And maybe it could be this, that glimpses of resurrection are so often found around tables where breadcrumbs fall and where broken people gather together, telling and listening to all the varied stories and still faithfully proclaiming the love and the joy and the beauty of it all. Amen.